Tap WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump says Israel may not have the might to kill Iran's nuclear program without powerful bunker busters.
They really have a very limited capacity. They could break through a little section, but they can't go down very deep. They don't have that capacity, and we'll have to see what happens. Maybe it won't be necessary.
The pro-Palestinian Columbia student detained by ICE will be released tonight. CBS's Linda Kenyon says the Trump administration will appeal a judge's order.
A White House spokesperson responded, quote, Mahmoud Khalil was given the privilege of coming to America to study on a student visa he obtained by fraud and misrepresentation.
The extreme heat on this first summer weekend. Camp counselor Millie Ennis is in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
It is really hot. Try to make the most of it, like try to make all the kids happy. And just remember to keep them all hydrated, because we don't want them to get super crabby, and we just want them to have fun at camp, even though it's super hot out.
CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority announced over $2.5 million in funding for workforce housing developments across the state on Thursday. The funding comes from the Vacancy to Vitality and Infrastructure Access Loan programs, which specifically aim to develop much-needed workforce housing. Most of the funding will be allocated to three workforce housing projects, including over $560,000 for a 27-unit workforce housing development in Chippewa County. The National Weather Service is warning Wisconsin residents about potential dangers related to extreme heat conditions this weekend. Weather officials expect the heat index temperature to reach over 100 degrees this weekend with oppressive humidity. Residents should be on the lookout for signs of heat-related illnesses like dizziness, headaches, fatigue, and muscle cramps. Health officials are recommending residents stay inside air-conditioned buildings as much as possible, drink plenty of fluids, and limit outdoor time for their pets. A Ladysmith man has been sentenced to prison after stealing over $100,000 from his employer. According to Rusk County court documents, 27-year-old Lucas Jones was accused of stealing ATM cash deposits while an employee of the market at Ladysmith. The thefts occurred between May and December of last year, and authorities say he admitted to taking the money. He was sentenced to 4 years in prison and 3 years of extended supervision, and was also ordered to pay nearly $76,000 in restitution to the business. Polk County residents will soon start seeing anti-tobacco posters around the area thanks to a student contest organized by the Polk County Health Department and Western Wisconsin Tobacco Free Alliance. County officials say local students submitted 21 posters for the contest, and 6 of those posters will be displayed throughout the area over the next few months. The contest was open to middle school students from Barron, Burnett, Pepin, Pierce, Polk, Rusk, and St. Croix counties. The posters direct residents to the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
The Pacers beat the Thunder. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports basketball. The Pacers dominated the Thunder last night in Indianapolis, 108-91. To tie up the NBA Finals at 3 games apiece, Oshkosh, Wisconsin's Tyrese Halliburton from the Pacers on Sunday night in Oklahoma City. It'll be the first time there's been a Game 7 in the Finals in 9 years.
You know, for the next couple of days, the narratives are going to be almost poison, you know, to talk about what this would mean to our city and legacy talk, and we played so well.
Baseball tonight, the Brewers opening a 3-game series against the Twins at Target Field. The Crew with a dramatic 8-7 win over the Cubs in Chicago yesterday, despite some very questionable balls and strike calls by the home plate umpire against the Brewers' Abner Uribe and Trevor McGill.
Pretty bad calls there in Abner's inning and in my inning. Yeah, I mean, that's baseball, I guess. I mean, they're going to have bad days back there, too.
That's Brewers closer Trevor McGill with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight with maybe a stray storm and lows in the mid-70s. This weekend, extreme heat warning. Mostly sunny, hot, breezy and humid. Highs mid-90s, heat index triple digits. Some storms Sunday night and Monday. Currently it's 87.
When we got our home appraised, we felt robbed. Compared to a similar home right around the corner, our appraisal was $80,000 less.
Latino and Black homeowners are about twice as likely as white homeowners to get low appraisals. If you believe your home has been unfairly appraised because of race or national origin, contact HUD at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Everyone has a right to fair housing. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend news headlines and also State Senator Kelda Royce. Will the Joint Finance Committee actually meet this week? She'll tell us. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, 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 one and all. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I might have been to 15 baseball stadiums, but I haven't yet interviewed Senator Raphael Warnock. But my next guest has. It's Dan Schaefer, creator of the Recombobulation Area and political editor here at Civic Media for State Slate. Welcome back to the show, Dan. It's great to see you again, my friend.
Great to see you as well. Always a treat to join you here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
And congrats again on the Warnock interview and being at the Democratic Party convention. I was really excited that you were able to sit down with the senator. And I think the senator has a certain gift for, I think, moments. Of course, being a preacher and all, right? Like this, he knows what to say. And it was, I think he was sort of the balm that the convention needed this past weekend, given the tragedy that occurred in Minnesota.
Yeah, it was, the tragedy definitely loomed large over the convention. A lot of people were, dealing with the immediate news of that. And you know, there was still searching for the suspect and all of that.
Right.
But I think, you know, Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock delivered a terrific keynote speech for the convention, really had people fired up. I had a really remarkable opportunity to sit down with him for 10 minutes right before he took the stage. So he gave an exclusive interview to the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media right before he took the stage. So we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the work that he had been doing on the big ugly bill, as he called it. We talked a little bit about how he has worked in a number of occasions with Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. Georgia and Wisconsin are both states that have not yet expanded Medicaid, so they have partnered together on certain initiatives with that. And just, you know, just kind of overall talking about the message that he was delivering to the Wisconsin Democrats assembled in Wisconsin Dells. So I encourage you to go check that one
out.
It's available for free right now at the Recombobulation Area.
Awesome. I got to meet him at the DNC. Lovely man, very charismatic. Super, super pumped for you. Again, go check out Dan's interview with the senator at the Recombobulation Area. You can also find it at civicmedia.us. Let's talk budget, because yesterday, you know, my colleague Todd Albaugh made this comment when the JFC canceled its committee hearing. Like, oh, yes, leadership at its finest. So if you missed the detailed legislative news, the Joint Finance Committee, which is responsible for really drafting the budget, the state's biennial budget, we don't need to go to work. It's a beautiful day out on Thursday. Let's cancel that, because there's not a June 30th deadline looming large or anything. Dan, tell us, where do things stand with the state's biennial budget?
Yeah, you know, big news this week, first reported by Civic Media's own Todd Alba, that the Republicans are proposing not just a cut to Governor Evers' proposed budget, but a cut to the UW system overall, an $87 million cut to the system. And both times that they have scheduled sessions this week to bring that up, they have had to delay in the first case on Tuesday and then cancel in the second case on Thursday. So clearly there is some outside pressure ramping up in response to these proposed cuts, which, you know, I think Todd has said that this could, you know, eliminate all remaining two-year schools, perhaps even lead to the closure of a four-year campus. So this would be a pretty deep and devastating cut. And I think, you know, with these continued delays on bringing up, you know, sizable chunks of the budget, we are getting closer and closer to the June 30th deadline to pass a budget. Otherwise, things would just default to where they had been for the past 2 years. So there's, you know, some disagreement, it seems, on the Republican side for this, particularly in the state Senate. There's confusion across the board on what Republicans are going to do since they walked away from talks with Governor Tony Evers. And now we've got, you know, just what, 10 days here before we need to pass a budget. And there's just a whole lot wrapped up in this. And it's going to be a really important, I guess, kind of 2 week stretch here in front of us for, you know, what Republicans will need to do to pass a budget.
It, again, Wisconsin as a microcosm of the United States, it seems like we are gearing up for, and by we, I mean the Republicans in the state legislature are forcing us down a path where we're going to have very late, very fast, very rushed budget deliberations. And the fact that they postponed and then have canceled these hearings, specifically as they're proposing such a drastic cut to the UW system, I think bespeaks the fact that they literally don't want to face the proverbial music and see constituents saying, what the hell are you doing? I was just talking, I forget who the guest was that I was talking with about this just this past Wednesday, but the United States, one of its major engines for growth, and certainly in Wisconsin, one of our major engines of economic growth, is the university system. It's our research institutions. It is the fact that we have these incredible universities. And in Wisconsin, such a pride and joy for decades for us to have these premier universities across the state, affordable, what used to be for every family. If your kid could get into college in Wisconsin, you would be able to somehow cobble it together. It was accessible for all. This is just so gross and I think so short-sighted. We're sitting on billions in surplus. Why are they doing this, Dan? Is this just, you know, what is it, anti-intellectualism? I mean, what's... Is there a rationale here?
You know, I think this is not the first time that, you know, Republicans have wanted to cut the UW system. And I think in a press conference earlier this week, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss talked about wanting, quote unquote, political diversity within universities and things like that, saying that, you know, conservatives and Republicans are not as well represented within the university system as he would like for them to be. That's kind of a separate issue entirely. But I think
so we just throw the baby out with the bathwater then? I mean,
right. And you made the key point there, too, is that we are sitting on a $4 billion surplus. So it's not like we are making these cuts at a time when the state is facing some sort of major budget crunch. The state has a surplus and is still looking to cut its university system. You know, there have been statistics that have shown just how much the funding for the UW system has declined over the last 15 years since, you know, Scott Walker was elected in 2010 and Republicans really made major cuts to the system, you know, during Walker's years and, you know, under Robin Voss's leadership in the assembly as well. So this is not, you know, a budget crunch reason. It's just that they don't like what's happening, I guess, at the UW system. And I think it is creates this interesting question for the budget, which is, does this mean if they're going to cut the UW system and Evers proposed major increases to the UW system, as and legislative Democrats have advocated for that as well. Does this mean Evers should veto the budget if Republicans pass
that's
a budget
the big question,
with a
right?
cut? Because then if he were to veto the budget, it would go back to whatever the base level of funding was for the last 2 year cycle. So it would not include that cut. So I think there is kind of this game of chicken happening to a certain extent of having Republicans daring Evers to veto the budget entirely.
Well, that's why I thought like Robin Voss's language. And of course, remember, everybody hates Robin Voss, including conservatives. But Voss's language about the cut was so fascinating to me. Right. He said something along the lines of that the Republican caucus supports the funding cut, but we're not sure if it's basically going to be in the final budget, which to me is like sending out the test balloon. Like, are people going to get real ticked off about this? So I guess what Dan and I, if I can speak for you for a moment and correct me if I'm wrong, what Dan and I are saying is, everyone get on the horns and call your state senators and legislators and tell them to increase our university's funding, not decrease it to the tune of 87 million and Senator Nass of Whitewater wanting to cut it even more. I mean, what? This guy's not on Earth One. Anyways, call your state senators and legislators. Tell them to keep their hands off the UW budget or increase it, for gosh darn sakes. Otherwise, you're going to have their jobs. Gross is all I have to say, especially when we're looking down the double barrel of the department, the Federal Department of Education cuts. Like, this is just insanity. You also posted, Dan, recently about a very interesting piece of legislation that has been introduced by a Republican that I 100% support. Tell us a little bit about this. This is trying to address some structural change in our democratic system. Tell us more.
I feel like I don't hear that one too often. Maggie Dawn introducing a Republican measure that has her 100% support.
100%.
Your Republican state representative, Duke Tucker, who's a first-term state representative, introduced a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state, DPI secretary, treasurer, and members of the legislature. All of the statewide offices and members of the legislature, basically it would limit any service time in the state government or whatever it might be, it to 8 years. We have a lot of legislators in the state that have served much longer than 8 years. You know, Tony Evers is facing his question right now on whether he's going to run for a third term. I guess it's also the case for Josh Call and some of the other folks in office there. But I think, you know, term limits is always such an interesting conversation. Like, the people who are opposed to term limits will tell you that, well, that just results in lobbyists writing legislation instead of experienced legislators. But I also think, especially these like executive type positions, think, you know, and as I wrote recently, I think it is a good thing to pass the torch and to not stay in office too long. And again, I think it's a different conversation when you're talking about the governor versus somebody like in the state Senate. But it is very interesting that this would be introduced and would require to be passed in successive legislative sessions in order to, you know, kind of reach the ballot the way these constitutional amendment questions have. But a very interesting question overall.
I have always been an enormous fan of term limits. I have worked in various roles in local government. I served in the federal government, and even leading not the entirety of county government, just, you know, the Office of Corporation Counsel. I was there for nearly 8 years. And I very clearly had a thought to myself, which was, hey, yes, I think it's good for someone else to take the reins here. I think different people bring different experiences, certainly different perspectives on how to contribute, how to lead those offices. Again, you won't hear it here frequently, but a Republican introduced legislation that I, Maggie Dawn, 100% endorse. Good for you, Representative Duke Tucker. And good for you, Dan Schaefer. Big, big interview with the senator from Georgia, Senator Raphael Warnock. Go check that out at the Recombobulation Area. Thanks so much, Dan. That's Dan Schaefer. This is the State Slate on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Check out all of Dan's great work at the Recombobulation Area and at civicmedia.us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jeremy Janine from Milwaukee as a microcosm of the state as our local and state coverage continues here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Environmental groups say the Midwest grid operator, MISO, is pushing an emergency energy plan that discriminates against wind and solar, the two cheapest ways to produce energy in our state. The plan favors fast-tracking construction of gas-burning power plants at the expense of clean energy projects. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission rejected a similar plan from MISO last month, but environmental groups say this one is even worse, with few guardrails to ensure fossil fuel projects are actually needed. Once again, Wisconsin had the biggest wild turkey season in North America. More than 50,000 wild turkeys were harvested in our state this spring. The Department of Natural Resources reintroduced the birds into our ecosystem in 1976 and has been managing the hunt ever since. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. For the last few months, Governor Tony Evers has said repeatedly that he would make a decision about whether or not to run for a third term after the state budget process is completed. In a recent opinion column at the Recombobulation Area, I made the argument that the decision that Evers should make should be to not seek a third term as Wisconsin's governor. This argument is not one of ideological differences or policy disagreements. Tony Evers has been a good governor and has served the state well. This more has to do with Evers' age. He'll be 75 years old in November 2026, and about how the Democratic Party has had a massive, inescapable problem in its unwillingness to pass the torch to the next generation. Tony Evers needs to do what so many other Democrats have struggled so mightily to do and step aside when the time is right. And after Joe Biden's catastrophic 2024, this is a conversation we need to be having, and we need to be having it now. Democrats can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It's time to do things differently.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org, a public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to my colleague, Dan Schaefer, for sharing some of his insights about the state of the state, if you will, in a segment we like to call the State Slate. We are in the midst of it, the meat and potatoes of state government. That is the biennial budget. So it's only fitting that we be joined by one of my other absolute favorite guests, Jeremy Janine, creator, founder, contributor, and president of UrbanMilwaukee.com. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
We call this Milwaukee as a microcosm because oftentimes the things that are impacting Milwaukee can have these major impacts in the state, or the things that you hear about maybe going on in Milwaukee first end up also happening in other places in the state. We've got a story like that this afternoon. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, in Milwaukee, we have a record-breaking building under construction. It is called Neutral Edison. It's a riverfront apartment tower, 31 stories. That doesn't sound record-breaking, but the key thing is it's made out of mass timber, which is a man-made engineered product. Simply put, it's combining layers of wood together to emulate kind of what steel does in terms of strength, but it has the environmental and aesthetic benefits of wood. Also, if you think about like historic buildings, you might see they have these massive wood beams. Very similar here. The key thing from a fire safety standpoint, all those different layers give you this really long burn time that, like, if the building were to start on fire, it would char. It would not burn through. But this building will break a record actually held in Milwaukee right now for the world's tallest mass timber building. Ascent opened in 2022. There was a mass timber building by the same company, Neutral, that opened in Madison early this year. I believe it's about 10 stories tall. But unfortunately, this will not be a world record holding building. It will just be a Western Hemisphere record holding building, because there is an even taller building in Australia that just started construction as well. But there is the potential for another building coming to Milwaukee. So lots of different moving pieces there, but a big project underway on Milwaukee's riverfront.
That's really exciting. And I have driven past Ascent, and I wouldn't know but for the fact that you just told me that that was built from mass timber. It doesn't look like that. I wouldn't be able to tell. So mass timber, you said it can be very environmentally friendly. It is has high safety. In other words, it doesn't really represent an increased fire risk, as well as being incredibly strong. How come it is that this is such a hot spot here in Milwaukee for the use of mass timber?
Well, this is the real opportunity for Wisconsin. The challenge in getting this technology, Milwaukee, if you go to the Third Ward, those are all traditional mass timber buildings from back in the 100 years ago when we had the wood, we had the forests in Wisconsin that could supply these just absolutely massive pieces of lumber. We unfortunately cut all that down. Europe has pioneered this method, this technology of combining these layers of lumber. There's now a chance stateside to bring kind of those, what they call them, like smart growth forests, quick growth forests, and then they manufacture that wood. None of that's being made in the United States today, and that's the real opportunity, not only to have these buildings produced, but to produce the actual product that's going into these buildings.
Is there a broader discussion happening either here in southeastern Wisconsin or across the state about viewing this as an opportunity perhaps for another type of industry to be brought here to Wisconsin, these quick growth forests that help support and create these mass timber buildings?
There's a nascent discussion happening right now. One of the key things, we had the Ascent building in 2022. It had to do some fire testing, which involved just not only getting the fire department up to speed, but getting structural engineers, civil engineers, everyone that goes into building a building, getting them up to speed on how it works, actually testing in a controlled burn environment. Neutral Edison just went through the same thing. So there's a lot of kind of shared knowledge taking place right now. There was actually a small federal grant that came to Ascent to study this technology. What are the actual fire ratings on it? Like, how can it be applied? And the big thing for Neutral Edison is they said their test is done entirely with off-the-shelf parts, which creates this real opportunity to really replicate this. You get more demand. There'll be a stateside demand then for actually supplying these products so they don't have to come into the port of Milwaukee on a ship.
Yeah, it certainly seems like a big opportunity given the fact that we're looking down the barrel of some pretty stiff steel tariffs and, of course, rising home costs that has been such a challenge for so many middle class families putting homes outside of the realm of affordability. Has this mass timber, does it have a single family home application, or is it more used for multifamily or office building, multi-story sort of buildings?
Similar to concrete and steel, you certainly could use it to build a home, but it's just going to be way more expensive. With a home, you're not stacking all those levels together, so you don't need the strength. It has great suitability, though, not only for tall buildings, but if you think of like a convention center where you might want a really large room without columns in the middle of it, mass timber is great for that. There's an office building outside of Madison that has just kind of wonderful conference rooms because it can leverage the length that you can get out of combining pieces of lumber.
Wow. What an interesting development. I'm going to have to take a drive past Ascent now and look at it with a much more discerning eye. Folks, that is Jeremy Janine. He joins us usually at least once a week for the segment that we like to call Milwaukee as a microcosm, because as goes Milwaukee, so goes the state, and as goes Wisconsin, so goes the country. He's the president and co-founder of UrbanMilwaukee.com. Check out his and his colleagues' excellent work there. Thanks so much, Jeremy. You have a great weekend, my friend.
You too.
We'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere on this Friday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with more in just a moment.
The Tap. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Republican state lawmakers have proposed legislation that would change the way the school voucher program is funded. The bill would use the state's general purpose revenue to fund school vouchers rather than state aid and local property taxes. Proponents of the legislation say it would provide property tax relief to residents and could increase state funding for public schools. Critics of the proposal, including Governor Tony Evers, raised concerns about the possibility of choice schools receiving more funding than the state's public schools. With extreme heat in the forecast across the state over the weekend, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is warning residents to be on the lookout for pavement buckling. When weather conditions go from cool to extremely hot quickly, the slabs of pavement in the road could begin to expand and push against each other. If the pressure gets high enough, the pavement can buckle and create an unexpected bump or dip in the road. Residents should remember to buckle up, keep their eyes on the road, and watch for slowing traffic and roadside workers. The city of Eau Claire plans to implement new parking rules in the downtown area, but officials are still deciding on how to do it. City officials shared the two plans with residents on Thursday, hoping to gather some public input on the matter before raising it in the city council next month. One plan would see a gradual implementation of paid parking in the downtown area beginning this summer. The other would see all paid parking in the area implemented simultaneously in January. With the latter plan, the city would also hire a parking administrator to oversee the changes. The Dunn County Board of Supervisors has selected Dan Dunbar to be the new county manager. Dunbar currently works as the assistant county manager and will begin transitioning into the new role on July 7th with outgoing county manager Chris Corpola. He will fully take over the position on August 8th. According to a press release, Dunbar has served in the public sector for over 20 years and played key roles in countywide budget planning and developing investment strategies. He has served as assistant county manager since March of last year. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. More big returns are expected at the box office this weekend, and there's a little something for everyone. If you're looking for something in a nice post-apocalyptic shade, check out the latest from the 28 Days franchise called 28 Years Later. The film is highly anticipated as original director Danny Boyle is back at the helm. Pixar's new film Elio also opens this weekend. It's the story about a space fanatic who tries to make connections with alien life forms to overcome an intergalactic crisis. That sounds even ambitious for a movie character. Elio is a nice family film rated PG, and for what it's worth, PG movies are crushing this summer. Elio is pulling in a very respectable 86% on the tomato meter. And finally, if you're in the mood for what appears to be a terrible movie, check out Bride Hard, starring Rebel Wilson and Anna Camp. Just about 10 reviews in, and Bride Hard is pulling low 20 percentile. Mercenaries take a wedding party hostage, not knowing the maid of honor is a secret agent. I see where this is headed. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy tonight with maybe a stray storm and lows in the mid-70s. This weekend, extreme heat warning. Mostly sunny, hot, breezy, and humid. Highs mid-90s, heat index triple digits. Some storms Sunday night and Monday. Currently, it's 85.
Matt and Air on Air.
From articles that I have seen, if you are a bagel purist, you should not toast your bagel. I think nothing's better than a toasted bagel and a schmear.
Folks, do we have a moment of honesty? Do you really like bagels, or do you like the schmear that is transported by them? Get rid of the stigma. If I walk into this room eating cream cheese out of a tub with a spoon.
Why is that wrong?
Matt and Air on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, State Representative Francesca Hong on Republicans playing games with the state budget, plus Kristen Lierley, John and Gordy, and much more.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As we do every Friday, it is time for Ask Maggie, the opportunity for all of you, our amazing listeners, to ask me any question you want. Baseball, beers, hanging out with my buddies, or, of course, the omnipresent fire hose of current events and news. You can submit those questions in real time at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Or when, you know, pondering one of the imponderables, a great question occurs to you, just email that to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. I've got my great senior producer riding along with me to ask me all these questions. Of course, the bit here is, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm supposed to have a time limit in which I have to answer these questions. Sometimes we go a little over. Welcome back to the show, Jamie. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm so glad to be here. Happy Friday. We made
happy
it.
Happy Friday. We did. It looked a little dicey thereabouts in the middle.
I was just going to say around Tuesday night, I was like, wow, we still have how many days of this? You know, using the fingers and the toes to count it out. But no, we made it. So it's good stuff. And we actually have some really great questions that we're going to ask today. A little bit of everything and even maybe getting into the state GOPers at the same time. All right. So, Cal, because we know in Ask Maggie rules really don't apply and you're not going to win any great prizes. But we have a really cool intro, so we always love to play it. So, Cal, when you're ready.
It's time to get your questions answered, Wisconsin style. Welcome to Ask Maggie. A rapid-fire round from politics to pop culture. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's Ask Maggie, and we're about to take your questions at lightning speed.
Honestly, besides talking to you every Friday, this might be my favorite part of a Friday.
Yes.
The intro. It's a good time.
Buckle up, Buttercup. Yes, it's good stuff.
All right. So I want to jump in because this is a really good one. And with your lawyer background, I hope you can parse this out from Linda in Oshkosh. She says this, according to my count, this administration, meaning the Trump administration, has broken at least 5 constitutional laws. Am I in the ballpark? Which ones am I missing? Which ones do I have right? Obviously, Cal, this one's going to take us a little time, maybe even beyond. We're going to go with 60 seconds for this one.
Oh, my goodness. Where to even begin? I'm going to say the first one that jumps to the front of my mind is the Equal Protection Clause. I would say easily 80% of Donald Trump's policies are facially discriminatory against women, against people of color, and of course against the LGBTQ community. And it was very interesting to me that we finally got a judge to say that unequivocally clearly. This week, a Reagan-appointed judge agreed with me. I would say the other fundamental and biggest impact constitutional violation that Donald Trump is engaging in all the time are the basic principles of separation of powers. For example, his tariff power, right? That is supposed to be done by Congress. He invoked this bogus economic emergency of which there was none. That's a constitutional violation. You look at not just, of course, the tariffs, but what is the other? There was another huge category. Now it's like escaping my mind. Oh, yes, this entire maybe we send bombs to Iran thing. Yeah, that's, you know, Congress should probably be involved in that as well. Those things to me are just absolutely essential violations. You can also talk about the deployment of the National Guard without the consent of the governor, and that those principles. I mean, there are many, 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 but I would look to equal protection and the separation of powers as the two big categories, and then every other violation that we're thinking of is going to fit into those categories.
You know, if you weren't paying attention in civics class or government class back in high school, you're really testing yourself at this point. And if you were, kudos, because you're like Linda and you can basically name the fact that there's been at least five constitutional laws that have been broken at this point. But I feel like that's something that's lacking right now, because basic government and civics classes tell you exactly what is happening right now, right? Or yes, at least what should be happening and isn't happening or being totally ignored. So I feel like pay attention in class, kids. Something we should be saying.
Absolutely. And of course, within the separation of powers, I think the other big category my brain was moving towards is the dismantling of all of these agencies that were created by Congress and that Congress appropriated monies for. There's this thing called the Impoundment Act, and it basically means that, you know, it's absent rescission, which is another technical term. Like, the executive branch is supposed to spend the money that Congress appropriates mm-hmm. to these departments, and that violation has been nearly daily by the Trump yes. administration, and many federal courts have so concluded, as those many, 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 many cases are making their way through the court systems.
Well, you know, and you talk about that, and you and I had a little text conversation because there was a story that came out yesterday that they want to do away with DNI. I mean, I don't know what else happens to Tulsi Gabbard at that point, but I guess she just goes back to wherever she came from. But I mean, this is kind of a prime, I mean, all of them are prime examples. But now we're talking about the security of the nation. So if you're worried about that, even if it's Tulsi Gabbard in charge, at least there's somebody to overlook things. I mean, I don't know if that's better or worse. Who knows?
But who knows? And of course, I forgot to start with this one. The executive order trying to do away with birthright citizenship. Yeah, that one.
Just a minor thing. Just a minor thing. Little things. It's the little things, I guess.
And listen, maybe the Supreme Court is going to tell us if federal courts can actually step in and yeah. on a nationwide basis say you can't place millions of people's citizenship status into uncertainty and have them receiving or getting different rights in different states with the swipe of a pen. Like, that's not how the Constitution's supposed to work. But the Supreme Court, yeah.
The auto pen?
Who knows? Yes. Who knows?
He loved the auto pen, Trump v1. Then he hated it. And now he
likes it again.
He uses it, even though he says it's horrible. I don't know. Who knows at this point? It's whiplash. That's what it is.
Indeed.
Lots and lots of whiplash. Let's go to a fun question before we get to another serious one. I like this one. This is a good one. And I know you're going to appreciate this because you love to check out all of the fine areas of the great state of Wisconsin.
I do.
This comes to us from Jill in Amory. She's planning her summer trips. She says that budgets are a little tighter this year for obvious reasons. And she wants to know, what are some of your favorite road trips within, you know, the state of Wisconsin or just over the border in our neighboring state? So I think we should probably go a minute on this one again, because sure. you do a lot of traveling. So I think you're going to have some fun places. So, Cal, a minute to answer Maggie's favorite road trips.
So my favorite road trip, and like, hey, find a supper club and have a bite after your road trip, is to go to Holy Hill. If you're in southeastern Wisconsin, that's one of my favorites. It's beautiful. And then if I look outside of that, anything driving around in the Kettle Moraine, it's amazing. I also love road trips in western Wisconsin, sort of along the Mississippi, and checking out, again, fun places to eat, the tiny little local taverns, if you will. Like, I really, really love that. But if I'm taking a really big drive, I love to go to the Apostle Islands and finding get off the expressways, get onto those county trunk highways and state roads, That is where the good action is. And of course, I would be remiss to say, and Mom, if you're listening, put your earmuffs on. One of my favorite kinds of road trips is one of my dear friends that owns a big old Harley asked me, hey, Maggie, you want to ride along on the back of the bike? We're going on a road trip with, in other words, a rally with a bunch of other motorcyclists. I've got my motorcycle boots. I've got my big old long Harley scarf that sort of flies in the back. But I love having no responsibility whatsoever for determining where we're going. And literally like a little kid in the back on the back of my dad's bicycle, just hanging out on the back of the bike. That's my favorite.
Here's a fun story. Growing up, my mom and dad both had motorcycles. Mm. And then when I came along, my dad decided he wanted a Harley. So they got a Harley and it actually had a sidecar on it just for me. And so, so I grew up in the sidecar going out to Sturgis with my parents, had the little t-shirts, had the little, belt kind of, wallet, all of that. I'd walk around my little black t-shirts with my purse with my, billfold and my boots and my puppy purse. Cause girl always has to have her puppy purse. Aww. And so this is way back in the day and, actually made it to the front page of the Sturgis newspaper that they would put out every year during the rally. And we camped out there sometimes. Sometimes we stayed in the family log cabin. But yeah, that was how I grew up on the motorcycle, going on the road trips. That's how we always did it year after year. I don't really remember a lot of road trips in the car because if my dad had a chance to get the Harley out and get it all packed. And, you know, I rode in style. Like I had my little sidecar all decked out. My mom had my favorite blankies in there, all my favorite pillows. Oh my gosh. Sometimes the puppy rode with me because we had a little poodle. Oh. And I had all my Barbies in the front of it. And I could crawl under there with my little helmet and I could play. I could nap. They had it so I could lay down and take
this. So I've now amended my like pinnacle, the apex of road tripping. If someone has a sidecar, yes, where I can like crawl in at 6+ feet tall and take a little nap, bring my little doggy Finny with me. Like hit us up at askmaggie@civicmedia.us and let me know. Cause I'm getting in the, what I'm going to call adults. Yes. Sidecar.
It was so fun because my dad had it all set up so that I had little cup holders in there and I had little snackies. That's so awesome. I was all ready to go because if we got on the road, my dad wanted to take the time to actually get there and we weren't
knows when it comes to road trip snacks.
Oh, you have to.
I could give like a master class on those. Yes. Like exactly how to construct the sandwich. Yes. So it doesn't get mushy. Hint: don't put the tomatoes on it.
No.
Put the tomatoes in a baggie to the side. Mm-hmm. And do not salt or pepper your sandwich because that releases water.
Yes.
Bring your little packets and do it in the car. That's. Yes. I mean, I love a good road trip.
Road trips are the best just for the food. And then being able to stop at all of the roadside stands and get like other food along
fresh
the
veg.
Way. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then you find
look,
all
there's
the
a farmer's stand like,
yes. And then all of the restaurants along the way. And sometimes you'll find like one of those drive up the old school, you know, drive ins where you actually get to put. It's the best.
It's the best.
Now, I will say this. If you ask my husband how I road trip, it's not great because, well, I get a little impatient in the car, but that's OK.
I have to be in the right mindset for it, which usually means I'll happen upon some beautiful weekend day. I won't have any plans. I won't have some pressing work project to do. Mm-hmm. And it will simply be like, oh, I know. Let's take a drive.
Yes.
The great Wisconsin pastime, a drive with some stops at your local supper clubs, farm stands, and perhaps watering holes. Thanks so much, Jamie Martinson, my senior producer. Thanks to all of you for your great questions. We get through as many as we can, given all the banter. 855-752-4842. You want to get your questions in or ask Maggie at Civic Media.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Dr. Kristen Lierley joins us now.
3 in 4 people have no idea that the hospital I work at in northern Minnesota will likely close if this big, beautiful bill passes, as will the hospital in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So it is incumbent upon us to have these conversations with each other, not in a hostile way, but in a genuine way about our values and the things that we deeply care about.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Well, it is the last segment of the last show on Friday afternoon. We got here together, everybody. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to senior producer Jamie Martinson for putting together all those questions for every Friday's Ask Maggie segment. You can always find that at 5:30. And if you want to get your questions in, they are always welcome. We try to curate these to get some serious stuff and some fun stuff every week. You can send those in anytime at askmaggie@civicmedia.us or text them in and just say, hey, it's an Ask Maggie question at 855-752-4842. But our discussion about road tripping has got me thinking specifically about the road trips for camping that I used to take when I was a wee lass with my folks. And it reminded me of one particular story. My folks had an enormous, huge, huge Buick sedan. The tan ones, with the huge doors that weighed, I don't know, it felt like hundreds of pounds. We were up camping. And I closed the car door on my mom's hand and completely like broke her finger and smashed her wedding ring around fingers, so we had to go to an ER to have him cut it off and splint the finger. That's always fun when you're in the North Woods, like, ooh, without GPS, right? We actually had to bust out the maps with my mom's finger all screwed up. Yeah, I was in the doghouse for the remainder of that fine trip. But it takes me back to a time where I used to get into all kinds of incidents, excuse me, everybody, with flora and fauna when I was a kid, because I'd just go wandering off when we were camping. And that reminded me that I have just come across an absolutely essential article about the flora and fauna to be aware of in the state of Wisconsin. It is finally getting to those warmer temperatures around here, everybody. And so I hope you are able to get outside. Remember, literally being outside, I don't care if you're taking a walk down the block in the city of Milwaukee or you're up in Ashland hanging out and enjoying some of Wisconsin's amazing state parks, it will make you feel better. So get outside. There's been so much hard stuff this week. Get outside this weekend. Enjoy some time in the great outdoors, but please be wary and aware of the following things. And a big shout out to Keith Ulig of the Appleton Post Crescent, who put this together for all of us that love to be outside during these summer months here in Wisconsin. Here are a few of the things that you need to be aware of. Of course, we've got our ticks here. They are relentless. They are everywhere. Check your pets, check your kids, especially behind their ears, in their ears, in your hair for ticks. Deer ticks, of course, are a known carrier of Lyme disease in Wisconsin, which has been ticking up every summer season. It is becoming more and more common. Just in 2023, the state recorded over 6,000 cases of Lyme disease. That is a record. The number of these cases has tripled over the past 15 years. So please, please, please be aware of that. It takes 24 hours for a deer tick to transmit Lyme disease. So again, every day when you're going to bed, if you're tent camping or you got a camper or an RV, check yourself out, use a mirror, make sure that you have done a good tick check. A good thing to know is if you are out in the wilderness, you're picking blueberries, doing whatever you like to do, maybe put on some UV protected long sleeve shirts and pants. And if you are doing a serious amount of hiking, I personally recommend gaiters and or tucking your pants right into the socks or into your hiking boots. That is a big deal. Of course, you got to look out for bees and wasps, especially if you are allergic. Be carrying those EpiPens with you. They will be attracted to anything sugary. So police up your garbages. Ensure that you give wide berth to coyotes, wolves, and black bears. There are a lot of them out there here in Wisconsin, but not so much that you have to be paranoid about this. Again, coyotes mostly going to target smaller animals, like think dogs, but give them a wide berth. Wolves you're going to find mostly in our state's Northwoods, but they can show up in these southern areas as well. And of course, our black bear population in the state of Wisconsin has been growing, and they are coming further south in Wisconsin. So again, it is a rare case that someone is attacked by a black bear, but go ahead if you're doing a lot of hiking, especially in the Northwoods, take your bear spray, take your pepper spray with me. There are also snakes and grumpy turtles, as the headline says in this article, excuse me, that you need to be aware of. Only two out of Wisconsin's 20 plus snake species are venomous. Those are the timber rattlesnake and the swamp rattlesnake. So check that out. You're very unlikely to come in contact with them. But again, doing a lot of hiking, fishing, camping, boating, portaging, whatever it may be, you might want to pull up a couple pictures of those two snakes. Those are the only ones that you really need to be concerned of. Timber rattlers, they can grow to 4.5 feet or more. They're mostly in rocky, hilly cliff-type areas along the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers. Again, be careful about that. The other type of snake is mostly in low, swampy areas. And last but not least, the snapping turtles. They're very aggressive out of the water, not so much in the water. We'll cover some of the poisonous plants you got to be on the lookout for next week sometime. We're out of time this Friday. Thanks for sticking around with me, everybody. Have a great weekend. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together in the out of doors.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The heat is on this weekend from Colorado through the upper Midwest, the Gulf, the Great Lakes, parts of the Ohio Valley, too.
This is an area that's going to see temperatures climbing to around 100, the heat index 100 to 105, and nighttime lows may not drop below the 60s and 70s.
Searing heat from meteorologist Craig Allen. Iranian and European officials are talking in Geneva. CBS's Erica Brown at the White House.
Iran's foreign minister said his country supports the continuation of discussions. Earlier, he said Tehran would not negotiate unless Israel's aggression stops.
And Israel says it'll keep attacking Iran's nuclear sites until they're gone. CBS's Jake Rosen says a pro-Palestinian college student is about to be released by ICE.
A federal judge in New Jersey ordered that Columbia University student activist Mahmoud Khalil must be released from detention by Immigration and Customs Enforcement as his immigration proceedings play out.
He's due out in about an hour. CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.